the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, one of the issues we have to deal with as we get older in age is elder care. Could you end up in a long-term care facility? Or what about the expenses of Medicare itself? You have to pay Medicare premiums, there's Medicare insurance, and then there's all those out-of-pocket expenses that can range anywhere from $260,000 to over $500,000, depending on your income bracket. Joining me on the program from PFS Group is Paul Horn. And Paul, let's talk about some of the issues that impact elderly clients, whether it's health or caregivers, long-term care. In your experience, what are some of the main issues that you have to deal with?
Some of the common issues that we look at with elderly clients really is two things. The first one is planning for potential health issues, and that's going to range from anything like long-term care planning to planning for unexpected events like Alzheimer's, if the client must have a stroke or become incapacitated. What we want to make sure is if something happens to an elderly individual, that their needs are met while they're still living. So that's make sure there's the proper documents in place, and whoever the trustee or caregiver is that's going to handle the finances for them has the ability to do so and is going to do that in a prudent manner.
One of the things that we keep hearing about, and Fidelity does this every single year, Paul, they put together a study of what the average retiree age 65 will spend over their lifetime in retirement, which could be 20 to 25 years. It was 245. This year it's 260,000, and it's going up at an annual rate of about 6% or more. So let's talk about these medical costs, because in most retirement plans or people that retire, they don't think about that. You know, you may be 65 years old, you're in good health, you're not thinking about what your health is going to be like when you're 75 or 85. So let's talk about how to best prepare for those medical costs.
Yeah, of course. And there's a new study that just came out, the 2017 Retirement Healthcare Costs Data Report that came from HealthView Services. And their projection actually is about $404,000 is going to be the total cost for retirees for healthcare costs.
Wow. I mean, we all know that when you're 65, Paul, you can go on Medicare, and depending on your income, there are now four tiers of pricing on Medicare. And if you're in that 30% bracket that earns a certain level of income, you got a whopping increase on your Medicare premiums this year. So what are some of the ways that you can plan for that cost? You know, there's two things that you're going to have to do. You're going to have to face those medical costs, and God forbid you get into your 80s or sometimes in your 90s and you end up in a long-term care facility.
Yeah, absolutely. There's many different avenues that can be used to help cover those costs. Typically for most clients, it's a combination of things. It's not just one item. And of course, you know, we've talked a lot about it recently. I know you, Jim, you have on the podcast with using HSAs and using those to help plan for future medical expenses. Other options would be just using money from investments, money from real estate assets. The other thing that a lot of people are beginning to turn to is long-term care insurance. Long-term care insurance can definitely be an answer. And when we look at that for clients, like any type of insurance product, there's really just two questions that we're trying to answer. Number one, God forbid something happens, can you afford to pay the bill? And number two, if you can afford to pay it, do you want to pay it and self-insure, or do you want someone else to pay that bill for you? And what we're finding is a lot of clients either one, can't pay that bill, or two, frankly, just don't want to. So long-term care is becoming a larger part of planning for clients.
Let's speak about long-term care. I know that obviously it's just like life insurance. The younger that you are when you apply for the insurance, the cheaper it is because there's less risk to the insurance company versus, let's say, somebody that's taken out long-term care in their late 60s or 70s. The probability of using it is greater. So is there an ideal time that somebody should apply for long-term care insurance where it is at least affordable and could be worked into a regular budget?
That's a great question, Jim. I know the general rule of thumb a lot of advisors like to use is in the late 40s or early 50s, because the younger you are with the long-term care, the cheaper it's going to be. Now, for each individual, that becomes a planning-related question, what's going to be best for them. Obviously, the sooner you get it, the earlier you have the coverage. So, God forbid, something happens in the 50s or early 60s, you're covered for that. The downside for that is you're going to be paying on a policy that you're most likely not going to use until your mid to late 70s. The average individual that uses long-term care is about age 76. So for a lot of clients, what can make sense is starting to get the policies in their mid to late 60s. So they're not paying on it for quite as long of a time. So while though it may be more expensive when you start the policy, overall, it's still going to be cheaper because you eliminate 20 years worth of payments by going that route.
We know that taking out a long-term care policy is one way to, let's say, cover that cost. But let's say, Paul, I'm taking it out in the 50s. I'm 55 years old. We know that the cost of long-term care at age 55 is certainly not going to be as cheap as, let's say, if I end up using it at age 75 or 85. Are there provisions like inflation protection or something that could be added to the policy? Because let's say you're taking out $4,000 a month premium or a $5,000 a month payment. Well, that's great now, but 20 years from now, $5,000 may not mean much.
That's an excellent question. And yes, inflation riders, or what is called COLA, cost of living adjustments, are built into most long-term care riders. Now, like any sort of coverage, you do have to pay a little bit more for that, but obviously it's worthwhile, especially if you're getting that policy early. With long-term care policies too, it's important to note that there's different types of policies. There's the policies that most people think of with long-term care, which is the traditional old policies, works similar to like a P&C, property and casualty type policy, where you pay for it, but you'll only use it if you need it. What's becoming more popular nowadays is a hybrid type of policy. These are policies that kind of serve two purposes. One is kind of life insurance or annuity. The second one as a long-term care. So if you don't need it for one of those avenues, you can use it for the other. So those type of policies are gaining popularity.
You do see people that have a life insurance policy. Maybe they got it to take care of the kids and the mortgage when they were younger. They're still paying on it. Maybe the policy still exists. It's got a lot of cash value in it. Are there kind of policies that you can use that are sort of called hybrids where there's conversions? Like, say, for example, it's an old standard policy, but you roll it over and convert it to a flex policy that has, let's say, the ability to turn that death benefit into a living benefit should you need it for long-term care.
Yeah, if you've got an old life insurance policy that has a cash value that you no longer need, one thing that we've done for a couple of our clients is those cash values can be transferred without tax ramifications into a policy that's going to help cover long-term care needs. So that is an option.
All right. So outside of long-term care, let's talk about these issues many retirees end up facing. We see this in our own practice, and that is Alzheimer's or dementia. And one of the problems that we run into with our clients as they age, all of a sudden, for example, they become forgetful, or maybe one spouse will call up and want to do something investment-wise that is totally doesn't make sense at all given the client's risk profile or given what the client has a history of investing, and all of a sudden they change it and you find out, well, there's a dementia issue there. How do you solve for that? Where one spouse may be doing something and maybe the other spouse isn't aware of, or maybe even the children of the spouse isn't aware. What do you do under those circumstances?
Yeah, Jim, this is probably the most heartbreaking thing that we see with our clients is these are clients that typically we've had long-standing relationships with, we know very well, and watching their health deteriorate is a very difficult process. One of the things that we try and do is get in contact with the emergency contact or the next of kin, really whoever that person is that's going to take over the responsibilities on the finances. We want them to be involved early and often. So when we're doing our reviews with clients, we will encourage them, number one, to make sure that we have the most up-to-date records, trusts, things like that. And secondly, that we have the contact information for who that person is. Because when a client calls in and is incoherent or hard to understand, or like you said, making recommendations or requests that are not prudent given their current financial situation, it's a very delicate process that we have to handle. in terms of handling that client, because a lot of times they're not even aware of what they're doing, or they may not even be aware that they're making these requests or remembering that they're making these requests. So it's a very delicate situation we have to work with both loved ones and sometimes other professionals like attorneys or CPAs.
So there's things called healthcare directives. Should every couple, for example, most couples have healthcare powers for each other. So if one spouse gets sick, or they may be co-trustees on their own trust. So if one spouse becomes ill, that spouse can carry on their financial affairs. Outside these documents of durable medical powers, trusteeships, and these medical powers which can void conservatorships, are there any other documents that are necessary or important in handling these issues?
One of the most important pieces of this is going to be a trust. Because with a trust, you're going to be able to protect your assets both while you're living and after you pass. So you definitely need to have some form of medical power of attorney or medical directive, really giving authority to another individual to make medical decisions on your behalf. You also need to make sure you're given an individual power to handle your finances while you're living. Most commonly, that is going to be done through a trust. Those documents will be part of the estate plan when you work with an attorney. One thing that can be highly advisable is having two separate individuals, having one individual to handle the healthcare or medical directives, medical decisions, and having another individual to handle the financial decisions. What that can do is help alleviate a inherent conflict of interest if you have someone handling both those roles.
You know, I was just going to bring this up because we have seen this over the years where a parent, for example, may have three or four children. And let's say one of those children lives in the city the parent lives in. The other children live out of state or in other cities. And they'll appoint that one child as guardian or sort of caregiver or the ability to handle the finances. And there is the potential, as we have seen over the years, for financial abuse. So what you just mentioned, is that one way to keep in check from that happening? Because we have seen numerous cases where we've had to get involved because there was suspected elder abuse being taken place by one of the children.
Absolutely. It's amazing to me to think what happens with elder abuse. Because when we talk about elder abuse, you have to deal with two entities. You have to deal with predators, people that are outsiders trying to get access to that money. That could be unscrupulous insurance agents or other individuals. What we're seeing is more and more common are those what I would call insiders, which are loved ones that are taking advantage of vulnerable family members. And that one, I think, is the most heartbreaking to see. So setting up these checks and balances, having multiple individuals involved is definitely a great way to do that. Another way to help protect, or another layer of protection you can add, is even having a corporate trustee, having a bipartisan third party that can help oversee and help make those decisions and alleviate some of these conflicts.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. What about the fact of an independent corporate trustee? Because we have seen this with families where, let's say, one child is singled out as the caregiver, the trustee taken care of, and it just raises the specter of elder abuse or somebody taking advantage of an estate. What about the idea of naming a child as, let's say, co-trustee with a corporate trustee? So that assures, like, let's say if there's three or four children, the corporate trustee keeps sort of that one child. You have a family member representing mom or dad, whoever case it ends up being. But the corporate trustee then works with the child to make sure that there is no case of abuse, because that child is kept in check, number one. And number two, in many cases, the corporate trustee may have knowledge concerning estate planning, tax planning, investment affairs that the child may not have. There's nothing worse when a parent names a child and puts this responsibility on that child, and that child is basically not equipped. They're not familiar with estate plans. They're not familiar with medical issues. They're not familiar with investment and market issues. And all of a sudden, they're faced with those kind of decisions.
100% correct there, Jim. A lot of times, family members don't have the expertise to really adequately make these decisions because it's not something they've ever handled before in their lifetime. So having that corporate trustee, that professional that has the expertise in tax planning, managing the investments, just handling the finances in a prudent manner, making sure tax returns are filed, all that sort of thing is very important. And it's something that can often be overlooked by loved ones. Children already have a difficult time dealing with the emotional side of watching their parents deteriorate health-wise. So adding this financial responsibility only increases the burden and creates the potential for something to go awry.
So as a person gets older, there's always the issues as we age, Alzheimer's, there's long-term care, there's also the death of the spouse, there's a change in tax decisions, Social Security benefits. Paul, what's the best way to address these? Because the worst thing you want to do is you're going along in retirement, maybe the first 5-10 years, everything is rosy, and all of a sudden, these very issues that we talk about that you least expect, a serious illness, Alzheimer's, maybe the issue if you live long enough, long-term care are up. Shouldn't that be done at the very beginning and incorporated in a retirement plan so that these contingencies, should they arise, you're already prepared for them. You've got an operating plan. You know who's going to take over. You know, for example, it may be one child with a co-trustee, a corporate trustee. You may have a long-term care policy. You may have a life insurance policy that can be converted to a living benefit or some kind of annuity rider. Shouldn't this be done up front rather than trying to scurry around and try to figure out something in the middle of the crisis when emotionally a lot of members of the family may not be able to deal with issues like this?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jim. And this brings to mind the quote from Ben Franklin, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And really, you are absolutely right. This is should be part of someone's financial plan on the onset of retirement, honestly done before they even retire, where they're looking at all these contingencies. So the value of the financial plan is having a roadmap if or when one of these situations occur. People know their responsibilities, their roles, and it's a more seamless handoff. I mean, think of it kind of like a relay race where one individual's given up their finances to another individual. It's a more seamless handoff or transition, allows the race to continue successfully.
So you start with a plan, and then also let me deal with something that sometimes arises out of the planning process. You're doing a plan and you find out there isn't enough assets there to provide for long-term care. Or maybe there's not enough assets to provide for what we call will be the total medical cost incurred during retirement. What are the options that people have available? You know, some of the things that I think of are maybe downsizing. So perhaps that the lifestyle is a little bit different, but affordable. Number two, you work longer. So instead of retiring at age 62, you may retire at age 66, the full retirement age. And heck, we have clients that are working in their 70s. In fact, there's a new movie out called If You're Not in the Obit, Eat Breakfast. And it's about some very well-known Hollywood movie stars, Carl Reiner, Mel Brooks, Dick Van Dyke, who are in their 90s that are living these wonderful, productive lives. So assuming that you don't have the money, in the process of planning, it's discovered, hey, there's not enough to cover these things. What are some of the options that an individual can take to make sure that they're covered in maybe, let's say, some alternative planning options that can handle this when the money isn't there up front?
Yeah, some scenarios that you would want to consider in that situation would be, like you said, Jim, delaying retirement, maybe working longer or at least working part-time. There could be other options of changing your lifestyle. So decreasing your monthly expenses, relocation to an area that's going to be lower cost of living, lower taxes. That can help as well. Downsizing the home can create additional capital that can be used to help fund these goals. Another thing that we're seeing outside of using the insurance, the long-term care insurance, for example, is reverse mortgage is another avenue that can be pursued if there's no other alternative. Then that can be a way for someone to maintain their home, but still have a way to create liquidity if they need to handle these sort of unexpected expenses.
So summing it up, some of the things that we have to deal with in retirement, as you mentioned, there are things like Alzheimer's, long-term care, you know, the sudden death of a spouse. There's tax planning that needs to be done. And the best way to handle all this is to have a retirement plan. Do that as early as you can, because it gives you a better outlook in terms of what retirement is looking like. It gives you more realistic age when it's certainly possible. And then it also alerts you to all the speed bumps you're more likely to incur throughout your retirement. Paul, if our listeners would like to get in touch with you regarding a retirement plan, tell them how they could do so, please.
Absolutely. We can be reached at 888-486-3939. Again, that's 888-486-3939, or by email at paul@paplava.com.
Paul, listen, thanks so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that completes my interview with Paul Horn. Once again, we are dealing with issues that seem to surface all the time now. I know we see it in our practice all the time, because as people age, they run into these very difficult issues. One spouse becomes seriously ill, Alzheimer's, dementia. These kind of things are a reality of getting older. And the best way to handle them, as we discussed here on the program today, is have a plan in advance to deal with them, rather than get hit out of the blue suddenly when maybe you, a spouse, or your children may be least prepared to handle them. On behalf of myself, Jim Paplava, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, I hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Paplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.